From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. This is part two of our focus on the battleground state of Pennsylvania, once a reliably blue or Democratic state, especially since 1992. In the 2016 presidential election, Pennsylvania's 20 electoral votes went to Republican Donald Trump. On a recent trip to my hometown, Newcastle, I set out to discover the factors that explain this shift, a shift we saw also in Wisconsin and Michigan in 2016. Analysts say that those three states helped catapult Mr. Trump to his electoral victory over Democrat Hillary Clinton. As we have said previously at these VOA microphones, the Electoral College, not the national popular vote, which Hillary Clinton won in 2016, determines who becomes president of the United States. There has been much talk about abolishing the Electoral College and switching to the national popular vote, but for now, the Electoral College remains key to the White House. As I mentioned in my newsmaker last week with the mayor of Newcastle, in the early and mid-20th century, the city prospered thanks to a network of railroads, manufacturing plants, and factories associated with the steel industry in nearby Pittsburgh. But by the 1980s, these industries declined, jobs vanished or moved elsewhere, and the population dwindled. Here's how Robert Bulano, a native of Newcastle, former longtime elected local official and member of the Democratic National Committee, describes Newcastle in its heyday.
We had a tin mill. We had Rockwell Corporation. They made axles for the trucking industry. We had many machine shops. We had the pottery, which was a world-renowned China manufacturing company.
Chenango China.
Yes, you'll find beautiful pieces of China still exist in the White House. And basically, the employment of thousands of people, Johnson Bronze, Mr. Machine, Rockwell International, Universal Rundle, you can go right down. These people made bathtubs, they made toilets, they made dishes, they made bearings for the steel industry in general.
I spoke with Robert Bulano in Newcastle on June 22nd. Newcastle is the county seat of Lawrence County, an area of rolling farmlands and beautiful countryside. In addition to the Italian, Syrian, Greek, and Central European immigrants of Newcastle, the Amish, a group of traditionalist Christians of Swiss German origin, are a unique and key component of Lawrence County's rural population. According to a Lawrence County website, the Amish are known for simple living, plain dress, and Christian pacifism. They eschew many conveniences of modern technology. Most of the Amish people in Lawrence County are dairy farmers and can often be seen plowing their fields with horses or tending the cattle. They do not drive cars. They travel via horse-drawn buggies. According to Richard Flannery, an attorney, philanthropist, and longtime member of the Pennsylvania State Republican Committee, the Amish are reliable Republican voters.
The Amish vote Republican. It's really the pro-life issue for them. They get out and vote.
Richard Flannery, with whom I spoke via Skype on June 29th, underscored another issue that unites many, but not all Republicans in Western Pennsylvania, a strong anti-abortion stance. Many believe Mr. Trump has delivered for them on this issue. One young woman told me that she will be voting for President Trump in November because of his, quote, pro-life position and the fact that he attended the annual March for Life rally in Washington, the purpose of which is to protest both the practice and legality of abortion. Other issues which weigh on the minds of voters in Lawrence County include health care and guns. I asked Republican Richard Flannery if Mr. Trump's attempt to eliminate the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, especially during the coronavirus pandemic, will be problematic for voters in November.
That's going to be an issue. I agree with you. That's an issue. Gun control is going to be an issue. And that's a big deal in Pennsylvania.
Is that because there are many who are concerned that under a Democrat, there will be more gun safety legislation and they fear that that would lead to less gun ownership?
Yes, probably. I personally have an issue about guns being taken away, but I think assault weapons should be restricted. There's certain kinds of weapons that don't belong in the hands of people outside of the military. And I think those that are hot about gun control make that too much of an issue.
Flannery also said if elections were held today, Mr. Trump would probably lose nationally, but emerge victorious in Lawrence County.
Frankly, I really believe that if the election were held today, President Trump would win in Lawrence County. He's got an awful strong following here. I am concerned about things he says. He seems to do something positive, and then he says something very negative that overcomes the positive. I think that is problematic, and I don't understand why it continues, but I hear supporters say, well, that's the way he is.
However, my next guest hopes that presumptive Democratic nominee, former Vice President Joe Biden, will prevail in Lawrence County. I spoke with Paul Stefano, chairman of the Democratic Party of Lawrence County, on June 22nd in Newcastle. A native of Newcastle, Paul teaches history at Newcastle High School and has been involved in local Democratic politics his entire life. Paul laments that in 2016, then-Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton all but ignored Lawrence County and is hoping the Biden campaign will not make the same mistake.
The city of Newcastle is, you know, an old industrial town, and it actually, for its size, is very diverse. It's made up of a lot of different ethnic groups that came to the United States in the last century. It has racial diversity, religious diversity, and it is a Democratic stronghold. Now, the county around it has always been a little bit more Republican, but for 28 years, Lawrence County voted for the Democratic nominee for president from 1972 till the year 2000. And since 2004, the county has been voting for the Republican nominee. 2004, 2008, 2012, the margin kept getting closer. And in 2016, it was quite sizable with the Trump election. And I don't know that the city is changing as a trend, but the city's a bit smaller. Just as an example, every office holder except one in the city of Newcastle is a Democrat. However, the city's a smaller part of the county than it was at one time. And that county vote has definitely trended more Republican. In 2016, what we had encountered and what still bothers me was at the national level, the Hillary Clinton campaign chose not to campaign in places like Newcastle, Pennsylvania. Any of those old industrial cities that surrounded experienced the same thing. We were told that the campaign would not maintain a presence because we did not fit their demographic, which I thought was very disturbing because since I've been involved, you know who's going to vote for you within reason. You know who won't vote for you within reason. But I always want to try to convince everybody else. That campaign seemed to walk away from that idea. To be fair, they did win the popular vote by 3 million votes, but that's not how we elect presidents in the United States. So you have to pay attention to the unique electoral college situation. And I think the campaign made a terrible mistake by ignoring places that didn't fit its demographic. We had an idea that meant that we were an old place. But we were never entirely sure what it meant because nobody ever actually explained what we lacked in demographics. After it was all done, you know, you read article upon article and talked to people that were active in other places. And there were a lot of places that were, say, former Democratic strongholds that were industrial, that were a bit older, that were basically being ignored by the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Paul, why do you think they ignored you because you were older? Do you think they were taking you for granted? Older voters usually turn out. Were they just taking you for granted, do you think?
A bit of that and a bit of, there had been a theory that had come along in Democratic politics in the last 20 years. And the theory was that for Democrats to win, they would need turnout in places where young people lived and smart people lived. There was an article back, my gosh, probably in 2002, about it. And it specifically mentioned places. It said it was time to start ignoring like these old industrial cities. Youngstown, Ohio specifically was mentioned, which is only 20 minutes from Newcastle. The article stated that that wasn't where Democrats would give votes anymore. And I thought, if you want to be a party that represents the concept of economic equality and opportunity and all of those things, and you are a party that supports things like the rights of workers to form unions and to bargain and all of those things, why would you want to walk away from anywhere where you did have, we'll call a blue collar or working class base? I never could make sense of it.
Well, that's really fascinating. So let me ask you, Paul, if Hillary Clinton made the error in most people's points of view, especially Democrats, by not coming here, wooing voters, what do you think about Joe Biden? Do you think his team will have learned from that? And he is also a native Pennsylvanian. I believe he grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and he is a very straight-talking type of person. I wonder if you think he will see the state differently, this part of the state, and adopt a different strategy.
I think his campaign will. Joe Biden is from Scranton, which is very similar. Scranton and Wilkes-Barre in Northeast PA, Central Northeast, are kind of places that are industrial too. They're similar to the southwestern part of Pennsylvania. Their background is in steel also, also coal. So he's kind of steeped in that type of Democratic Party politics. Also, his demeanor is one that he does tend to communicate in a way that connects to how Democrats used to communicate with their voters. It's very much more a straight talk approach. And he's very open to progressive ideas, but he always has had a concern that we not leave behind working class interests. And I don't accuse Hillary of not being concerned, but they never expressed it. They were always moving forward, but not realizing that, you know, sometimes you do need to pay attention to how progress is made. And there are people that are going to be left behind and they need help. And you need to communicate that to them. But they never clearly communicated.
So talk about the economy here in Lawrence County, in Newcastle, the unemployment rate. It seems a depressed area, but tell me more about the economic scenario here and what you think people are looking for. And do you think that President Trump met the needs of those who decided to vote for him instead of the Democratic candidate?
When I was born, the economy of Newcastle and basically this entire, you could almost draw a 100-mile circle around Newcastle. The economy was based around manufacturing, a little bit of the rail industry because there was constantly product being moved, you know, between factories, you know, as the supply chain would connect and vertical integration, you'd have trains running at all times and all that kind of stuff happened. And then when manufacturing collapsed and it started in 1980, 1978, 79, 80, and it went on and on, we never adjusted. Now, there are still steel mills around here, but they don't need 1,000 workers working three shifts where overnight is full time. And the famous afternoon turn of 3 to 11 is full time. You know, now you might have a steel mill with a couple hundred people. And while they may be making good money, it's not like when you had steel mills with 1,000 workers. And there was a steel mill after steel mill after steel mill. And not just steel, but making of other products, whether it would be the case here in Newcastle, we made plates and glasses. The Shenango china was, you know, sold all over the world. Its product was used in the White House. That's gone. Rockwell made axles for Ford. Gone. Mesta made machines that made steel. Gone. All of that stuff is gone.
And what has replaced it, if anything?
Tech never came along here. Finance didn't happen like you would have in a big city. In Pittsburgh, you have banks that have huge back office operations. The medical tech that was connected to UPMC, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, that never really left Pittsburgh or Allegheny County. In the surrounding areas, UPMC owns all the hospitals, and they've done great things in the hospitals with upgrading them, but the research isn't being done here. So what we have is we have people getting health care. So our economy is based kind of around health care, around this manufacturing that doesn't employ a lot of people. The service industries that you would find also in like a Pittsburgh, because, you know, people are going to lunch and those things. Without the big employer, there's not the corner luncheonette, the bar that's open all the time and that's busy, or the maybe high-class restaurant where the bosses from the old steel mills used to go, or where the bosses in any of those flourishing industries go. So these small towns, they've lost their stores. And that came with the Walmarts and now Amazon and everything else. So you don't have a lot of stores. You have big hospitals that employ people. And like the biggest employer in Lawrence County is Jameson Hospital. It's actually UPMC Jameson now. That's our biggest employer. You know, a lot of the jobs there are decent jobs, but it's a not-for-profit that has a monopoly on healthcare in the area. It's not something that's competing where it's the biggest employer and there are multiple other hospital groups. And you would find that in any town around here. And so, you know, then there's social services because people are not paid a lot of money like they were when the steel industry was here or like they're being paid in big cities where you have tech and finance and some of the medical tech research going on. So social services have to be provided because people do qualify for various services because they have low-paying jobs. And so you have this kind of strange economy where you have healthcare, you have social services, you have a little bit of service happening, you know, restaurants and that kind of thing, but not like in a vibrant area. And so it creates kind of a stagnation. Trump campaigned on manufacturing, and whether if anybody believed him or not, I heard many people say, what's the difference? Nothing new is happening here. And it struck a nerve with some voters. So it's kind of this, we have this economy that's stagnant. We do healthcare. We do social services. But the only thing new that came along, and it doesn't employ a lot of people, is the medical marijuana that Pennsylvania made legal a couple years ago. So, you know, we have a facility that's producing this medical marijuana product. But again, there are not 500 people making $25 an hour there. So the jobs may not be bad, but there are just a few employees tending to this product. And like anywhere else, as inequality runs across America, if you have a professional job here in Newcastle, you're doing okay. Housing is cheap. You can get a nice or a large house in a nice neighborhood for less than you would in a more booming area. So if you are a school teacher, an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, a nurse, you can have a good life, but there's nothing for that person that's unskilled or maybe uneducated, skilled but not educated. So they might have technical ability, but there isn't that big tech thing happening here where they could go and work somewhere.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our guest is Paul Stefano, chairman of the Democratic Party in Lawrence County, an area about 60 kilometers north of Pittsburgh in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. Now back to our interview from June 22nd with Paul Stefano, chairman of the Democratic Party of Lawrence County in western Pennsylvania.
Paul, talk about the youth vote and the women vote as we approach the 2020 November election.
I would like to see the youth come out. I have concerns just because of the general apathy of young voters. It was projected by the Sanders campaign that all the young people would come out and vote for them, and they really didn't in big numbers. I have concern, not that they'll vote for Trump, but they just may kind of stay home. I do see a huge part of this cycle is the role of the female voter. I think suburban women, urban women, and in some cases, rural women may very well come out in large numbers and vote. I mean, the message of Trump did not resonate with the female voter, and I think that's why they're kind of giving this energy to the party right now.
So, Paul Stefano, do you think that Lawrence County is in play? Do you think that there is a possibility of flipping the county from Republican to Democratic, from even flipping the current congressional seat, which is in the hands of a Republican member, to Democratic? And then secondly, on the mail-in ballots, a huge procedural issue, which is going to have an impact on the outcome insofar as those states that have a more liberal policy toward absentee balloting, the ability for people, especially during COVID-19, which will still be with us in November, to request a mail-in ballot, that is going to be very important in terms of getting votes out, whether Democratic or Republican.
In Lawrence County, and I have to admit this, we lost our voter registration edge for the first time in, I think, four decades. So we are a Republican county, at least in registration. Now, while that made me sad because it happened now here under what I guess I could say, you know, was my watch, it had been a trend that was a long time coming. That being said, in the June 2nd Pennsylvania primary here in Lawrence County, we outvoted the Republicans. So I have this belief that maybe we can pull something off. Now, Trump won Lawrence County by a fairly substantial margin. I'm not sure that that can be truly reversed, but I don't think he's going to win by that margin again. And by the numbers that Pennsylvanians voted, Democrats outvoted Republicans all over the state. So I've got to believe in our congressional district, it could happen also. I have that hope going into this fall.
And the mail-in ballot. In terms of Pennsylvania, where does the state of Pennsylvania stand with respect to voting by mail?
Pennsylvania is an interesting thing. The mail-in concept was championed by the Pennsylvania Republican Party. And the trade-off in the legislature was straight ticket voting would end in Pennsylvania. So for years and years, every election, I would say vote straight ticket Democrat, vote straight ticket. There is no straight ticket vote where you, in straight ticket, of course, you only vote for candidates of one party. The trade was straight ticket would end if we would go to mail-in voting. Now, it was a Republican proposal. The Democrats went along with it. But immediately after, and you see this on the national level with President Trump, the Republican Party of Pennsylvania did not embrace it. Just the way President Trump is portraying it as something where, even though he votes by mail, it's somehow improper and things can go wrong. The same thing's happening here. So the Republican Party really didn't promote it among their party members. The Democratic Party grabbed it and promoted it to the point of our county work was remind people to get a mail-in application, help them get a mail-in application, make sure they vote by mail. And I think it helped us to actually increase our numbers. Now, it's kind of a weird coincidence that with everything with COVID-19, our party seeming to accept that there is a pandemic, the other party is in some kind of denial about it. I was happy to bring people mail-in applications and promote it because then I knew that a lot of people that maybe were nervous about leaving the house because they were older, they were going to be able to safely vote. And so I do think that was a big reason why Democrats outvoted Republicans in this primary, both in the county and in the state. I will say this now that, you know, we kind of already staked our positions and it's not too late to ever change. I really didn't understand why the Republican Party took the position it did. President Trump didn't take the position immediately. The idea of mail-in voting in our state was a Republican idea. I, for the life of me, don't know why. And actually, to be fair, in California, there was a special election in a congressional district. It was the first test of mail-in voting in California, the Republican did beat the Democrat.
And here I'd like to bring in Republican State Representative Richard Flannery, who takes a slightly different view from the National Party. In contrast to President Trump, who has vociferously opposed mail-in ballots, even though he himself voted by mail in the Florida primary, and despite the fact that there is scant, if any, evidence that mail-in ballots are more prone to fraud, Richard Flannery sees value in voting by mail, especially as the country and state of Pennsylvania continue to navigate the COVID-19 crisis.
I think voting by mail is important, and I think we should vote by mail. We have a system in Pennsylvania that I don't think is a problem. We have barcoding on the envelopes that contain the ballot that gets mailed in. I think it's the same system as Oregon. When the ballot gets sent out, the barcode is somehow tapped. And there's a system that knows that Dick Flannery got a ballot. When it comes back, that barcode is tapped again, and it will say Dick Flannery voted. Nobody's going to be able to send in a ballot with my name on it. To me, that is why I don't have a problem with it.
That was Republican State Representative Richard Flannery. To close, Paul, any other thoughts you have about what the party is going to do in the run-up to the election, if you're feeling cautiously optimistic or not? What do you think the chances are for Biden or even the Democratic congressional candidate in this particular climate?
I am cautiously optimistic. Polls are good. Hillary always led, but you didn't have this sense that there was a blue wave. Some people thought that perhaps at that time that Trump would harm the entire ticket. He didn't, but there wasn't the feeling of this blue wave. in poll after poll, we're seeing a constant trend that it could be a good November for us. And I'm going to borrow a line from a former Pennsylvania senator, the late Arlen Specter. And he always said, you either run unopposed or you run scared. And so I tell everybody, believe we'll win and act like we're losing to the end. And that's the only way you can do it, because you cannot rest on your laurels, because you're never sure what people are going to do once they go in to vote.
Arlen Specter, a Republican from the Philadelphia area, who then became a Democrat in his later years. Quite an icon, whichever party you belong to, no question about it. Well, Paul Stefano, chairman of the Democratic Party in Lawrence County, thank you so much for your terrific insights. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I enjoyed this.
That was Paul Stefano, chairman of the Democratic Party of Lawrence County, Pennsylvania, in our June 22nd interview. And now we give the last word to Robert Bulano, a Democratic activist in Lawrence County, who asserts that no matter what, Donald Trump's ardent supporters will vote for him in November, but he questions the wisdom of that choice.
His Republican base is going to vote Republican. But if you were to reflect to the 4 years of what he has accomplished, his management style, his personality, there are many people that would say they disagree with his presidential, I guess, presentations. But the problem is they're so confused with the system. What has the system done for them? What has Washington done for them? Where is it at? Where are we headed? So the emotions come out without understanding the historical values of each party. The basic person who goes to the polls, they don't have a deep understanding of what it is that goes on in Washington or in Harrisburg, which is our state capital, and how it has directly affected them. And they're convinced through commercialism and so forth that what they say is going to be delivered. And if they look at the history of the 20th century or the 1990s, you know, and before then, they saw that the Democratic Party represented their needs. But when their needs weren't met, they were convinced that President Trump, what he says, whom he fires, whom he keeps, his inconsistency, his lack of loyalty to people that disagree with him versus Biden, who has 30 years experience and the ability to organize and work with people, being empathetic and sympathetic on personal levels. Many people going to the polls would say he's the better candidate, but President Trump said he was going to clean the swamp, and basically that means all the corruption, all the lobbying and all that, and all he did was change the dimensions of the swamp. A lot of people are seeing that now, and I'm hoping that they realize that, I guess, the things that he promised he's not delivering, his inconsistencies, how he dealt with COVID, how he deals with China, how he deals with the international markets, how he deals with his own personal businesses. Why didn't he divulge his tax? Every president in the history of the United States has done it. Why did he refuse to do it? I don't have an answer to the why, but where is it? How does it affect all of us? Who is he really helping?
Robert Bulano's reference to Mr. Trump's taxes sounds prescient, considering the Supreme Court's recent rulings stating that the president's finances are not immune from congressional oversight. However, most legal analysts say it is unlikely that his records will be made public before the November elections. On that note, that is all the time we have on this special Western Pennsylvania edition of Press Conference USA. I'd like to thank my special guest, Paul Stefano, chairman of the Democratic Party of Lawrence County. Thanks also to Democrat Robert Bulano and Republican Richard Flannery for their time and insights. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.